You're good to go. Right, well, hello everybody. Welcome to the Talk to Danielle podcast. I am your host, Danielle C. Baker. And before we get started, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. And of course, this is season 3. So I do invite you to have a look at the 2 previous seasons. There's some topics there that may be relevant to your realities today. So go have a look. There's quite a few episodes there that are very interesting. And today I have a fun guest coming on. I really enjoy his work. We're probably going to get full on Canadian on everyone today because of the topics. But I have Craig Colby with me today. Some of you may know him very well, especially in the world of sports. And I'm having him on today because he has great stories. This latest book that just came out, really everything that he talks about is transferable to the world of it as a parent, as an adult, even at work in the workplace. Just the kind of the philosophy that he brings in, the messages that he brings in, a great storyteller. So thank you so much, Craig, for joining me today. I'm really excited to have you on.
I'm very excited to be on your show, Danielle. Thank you so much for having me.
Great. So we're gonna jump right in with this book that just came out. You said it was last month, right? It was already a month. It's unbelievable. That's it. The Unqualified Hockey Coach. And this is what I like about it is it's not just about hockey. This is why I was saying we're going full on Canadian on this, but there is quite a few messages and the life lessons we learned that only really experience will get you there. And there's one in particular where you're talking about your parents, the relationship that you've seen in your parents, and how you were able to apply that into your own relationships in your own life. So can we talk a little bit about that? We'll jump right in right away and talk about this, how you saw love evolve over the years just by watching your parents, because that does affect us as parents. Our children are watching us all the time. What does that look like when they're actually watching us?
Well, obviously, we watch our parents even when we don't know that we're watching our parents. They affect us in ways that we may never understand, even when we become cognizant of the effect they're having on us. The chapter in the book is called True Love Versus the Monster Under the Bed. And the monster under the bed is the thing that's going to get us and our life. We all have a monster under the bed. We may not believe it's real until it comes for us. The monster under the bed for my mother was dementia. And my mother was a writer. She started a Thunder Bay Writing Festival with some colleagues. She wrote for the paper in Thunder Bay. She self-published her own book. She was part of the Northwestern Ontario Writers Association. I've got an award that she won right next to me. She was a really smart, tough, well-spoken, articulate, loving person. So dementia for her was maybe the scariest thing she could get. Right? That was terrifying. The idea that she would lose her mind. When we found out of the diagnosis, I said, well, what do you think, Mom? And she said, I'm scared. She was right to be, because everybody, it's a monster under the bed for old people, because you know what's out there, you've seen it. But now she knew the monster was coming for her. There's a monster waiting for all of us. A monster is going to get all of us. The other side of this equation is true love. And when you're young, you don't think of your parents having a love story. Right? You think of your parents as your parents, and they do the things for you, and they get on your back, and you rely on them, and they are, if you're lucky, a constant. I really became aware of my parents' relationship as a love story after my mom had been diagnosed with dementia. And I'm going to paint a picture for you. It's right at the beginning of this story. So, my mom, we know at this point, right? We know it's coming. I'm home in Thunder Bay to help my parents out. They had, this is coming out of the pandemic. My parents had been alone because my mom was declining. And my dad never really learned to cook. They were getting thinner. They'd both fallen in the house. My mom had fallen and knocked out her 2 front teeth, so she had a bridge in. And it's at night, and they're under stress. They're under pressure from us to move into a safer place. And, there's been a lot of tension, and my mom's determined not to go. So we're sitting, it's the evening. Nobody's turned on the lights in the living room. We're lit just by the light in the hallway. It's dark. My mom is sitting in her favorite chair by the bay window. Her bridge is out, so you can see her two missing 2 front teeth. She's asleep. Her jaw is sagging. She's snoring. My dad's crossed the room holding his evening scotch, looking at her. My dad's a very thoughtful, introspective person. He's a scientist. And he said, "Dorothy, you're my princess. I love you so much." And he said it really quietly. He knew she couldn't hear him. And it was with conviction, and it was a promise. And that's when I knew I was seeing true love. That's when I knew I was seeing an almost mythical creature. I've been married for 27 years. I love my wife. I think she's the best person I've ever met. I believe we've had a really great marriage. But I've always believed that you meet someone, you make a decision to marry them, you love them, and then you make a commitment and you work through it. I always kind of considered true love, the idea of true love, as a bit of a confection. A nice little story dreamed up by Hollywood to get you to buy tickets, by Hallmark to get you to buy cards, by the flower shop to get you to buy flowers. I'm way more pragmatic than that. But now I knew I was seeing it. I was seeing it with my own eyes. I was seeing it. And the way it played out is that my dad was going to do anything he could to protect her. He knew they should move out of that house. She didn't want to. He was going to do everything he could to stay in that house to protect her. Everything he could to protect her. He was going to sacrifice the rest of his own life. And for my mom's side, the only thing that brought her comfort, the only thing that brought her joy, the only thing that brought her safety was my dad. I went up once to help out. We thought she was going to die. I went up kind of to see her, maybe for the last time. And I remember she'd rebound a little bit when I came up, and I walked in the room and she saw me. She went, "Craig." She was so happy to see me, her son. I hadn't been around. And the first thing she asked is, "Where's Pete?" When the doctor came in, she said, "He's the only one I trust." Right? Maybe trust wasn't the right word. It's in the book, but basically, their lives, their happiness was so interwoven that they were the same thing. And, I had been privy to their fights, which were epic. They were not afraid to say what they thought, even if it was bad. But I saw with my own eyes that true love exists.
And this was what I find fascinating about this story, because I've seen it recently with my dad and my stepmom. Because again, it's a shame, I would say. I don't think it's the right word, but that we notice it when things are deteriorating, right? When you're at the end, because it's the same health issues, and watching my dad taking care of my stepmom, and to her, they seem closer. They were always close, but looking at it from the outside, as a third party, you notice it more, because we're kind of stuck with our own lives. We don't, and like you said, we don't see the love story in our parents. So to see it, it just hits you different in terms of, it puts it into perspective in your own relationships. And you had mentioned that off camera, that you've noticed that you look at your marriage differently from seeing that, from what your parents showed you. Are you comfortable with sharing that a little bit?
When I saw what I saw and internalized it, the question you ask yourself is, do I have this? I want this. I want this. So, but do I have it? Do my wife and I have that? And I made effort. I talk about it in the book. I made efforts to raise the awareness of our relationship with my wife and I. I'm a very external person. My wife is a very internal person. She does not like being in my books. I found this out after while I was publishing my first book. I didn't really think about it. It's a memoir told through my baseball hats that she kind of expressed that she wasn't that comfortable with it and she'd never mentioned it. And I went, "Oh yeah, I should have asked her about this." And my editor at one point in this story said, "You need to write more about your wife and your relationship in this story." And I floated it by Nancy, and she just said, "It's not going to happen. There's too much for me in that last book." And it's great in the first book, right? But I realized that when I floated it, when I discussed it, when I created this meta awareness of our relationship, and she knew how I felt about her, that like we love our kids, our kids are super important. But I told her, yours is the opinion that means most to me. There's nobody whose opinion matters more to me than you. There's nobody's approval I want more than yours. And since that's been raised, I feel like we have a closer relationship. I feel like we're much closer to where my mom and dad is. And that's one of the lessons in this story in particular, is that you can tell your kids whatever you want, but the biggest lessons they're going to learn from you are from the way you live your life. The biggest lessons they learn from you are from the way you live your life. That's what they're going to take away. And that's what I've taken away, especially from my dad. And my mom was dealing, but my dad was taking care of her. My dad would do anything.
Yeah.
So,
That's great. I was going to ask you that if you have great, words of wisdom you can share about how that transfers into everybody. For everybody, I had something similar. When we say our kids are watching us, and our relationship with the other parent really sets the foundation for how our kids are going to find, love or other relationships. I remember my parents, it was very chaotic with them from day one. I was born, they were already separating. So there was already chaos, but it was always very impressive in the way that they interacted. And I remember, I must have been old enough because I remember that fight. It was a pickup. So they were meeting in a spot for us to switch. We were going to our dad's, and a fight broke out. Like they were yelling at each other outside of the car. So me and my sister in the back seat just kind of looking, waiting for the storm to pass. And my dad just came back. And back then, the chain smoking. So he'd go in the car and start smoking. He goes, and then he just took a deep breath and says, "I am so sorry. You'll never see that again." And that hit me then. I must have been by maybe 6 or 7 years old, going, "Oh, that's not normal." You know what I mean? Like it was just like, "Oh, okay, hold on." So I remember it leaves a mark for a child to see how parents, even just the little side comments, or you're stuck in the routine every day, so you're not necessarily aware of what you're saying about the other parent or how you interact with the other parent, but that's what the kids are watching. So that's why I appreciated the story in your book, is saying even years later we're still learning how we can show up. And what that true love really looks like. It's not the fairy tale story. So I think it's so important for people to have that message. So how do we teach our children to have healthy relationships, right? To not look for that.
And when you become aware of that in yourself, what you've learned, then you can take the next step and be aware of what that means to your kids.
Exactly.
It was not bad for us to see our parents fight, because when they stayed together and they loved each other, you realize that these things are natural and they happen. If you're in long-term relationships with anybody, these things are going to happen and you get over them and move on. And that's part of what the true love story is. True love story isn't the man wakes up before the woman in the morning and chops a cord of wood and tunes up her car, and his sweat smells like cologne. And she wakes up with the wind blowing through her ears and opens the window and birds fly in and dress her. Like that's just not it, right? What's it is we are messy, uncomfortable beings who screw up. We're going to let down everybody we love, and everybody who we love is going to let us down. But true love is working past that to the bigger, more important things in life. That's what it is. And once you realize that, that's going to affect the way you act in front of your kids and the way you explain things to your kids. And it does set a standard. I tell my boys, your mom has set a really high standard that's going to be tough to meet. And that's a good thing. My mom set a high standard. The first girlfriend I had, the first girl I brought home, was the smartest student at school. Right? I needed somebody who could handle the conversations in our house.
That makes a difference too, right? It's just, yeah, I love that. I'm going to move on with, because like I said, you're a great storyteller, and your first book, All Caps, is also sort of a memoir, but revolving around your cat collection, which is what I love, is the symbolism behind all of it.
It's a
In this
weird book.
new, Yeah, and this is what I like. In this new book, you also use a lot of the stories, but this time is about your coaching experience as an unqualified hockey coach. But what I like about that is what you share in those stories is transferable to whatever our reality is to our lives. So, the main message being, you show up, be helpful as much as you can. Can you kind of share that with us a little bit? I know it's in the book, but just to share with people, our listeners, what that looks like for you.
Sure, I should explain why I was the unqualified hockey coach. I
Yes.
coached hockey for about 12 years. I've never played, which is a bad spot to be in Canada. We moved from the United States, from Michigan, when I was 7, 8 years old, just about to turn 8. And my parents were not spending their winters in dank hockey rinks. They wanted to ski. So we skied. So we never picked up hockey. My best friend was a big hockey player. I watched him play. I became friends with the hockey team. When I went to school at the University of Windsor, I watched the Red Wings. I learned to love hockey. I got paid to watch hockey. Never played. Can't skate. Can stand up, kinda. Can move, kinda. That's it. But when my oldest son was in his first year playing for a team, at one of the practices, none of the coaches showed up. Now they practiced with another team, so they joined the other team. But I'm the guy who says the thing. That's sort of my role in everything. It's my gift, it's my curse. So I mentioned it to the head coach. And of course, the end result of that was me being on the ice the next week with my first pair of skates, gloves, stick, and helmet. Never owned any of those things on my own before. And he convinced me to coach the next year. I thought I was just filling a gap for some young guys who didn't show up. But he convinced me, perhaps incorrectly, that I should be coaching because I'd played football. I'd been captain of the football team. I'd played soccer. I played sports. And I always expected to coach football or baseball someday, but hockey, not a chance. So I ended up playing hockey. And once you're into those hockey rotations, I'm not going to go into the hilarious, humiliating stories that are in the book, but they're there. They're there. Once you get into those situations, you kind of keep getting roped back in. And once my youngest son saw that I was coaching my oldest son, he wondered why I wasn't coaching him. Next thing you know, I'm coaching two teams. I've never played hockey. So I had to find a way to be useful. I considered myself a puck herder and a door monkey. In hockey with little kids, you have two doors, the defensive door and the offensive door. And the head coach stands on the bench and watches play and gives advice. And your other coaches have to open the door and get people on and off the ice. But the younger they are, the harder that is. But I could do
So
that,
true.
right? And I could listen to the other coaches and the advice they give and listen to what they did in practice. And I learned to yell that advice loud during the game, hopefully at the right time. And that was a way to be useful. But the long and short of it is, you got to find a way to be useful in these situations. And I will say that I don't want to give away the ending. In my last years, I ended up being a head coach. Even more terrifying. I did not want to become a head coach. With my oldest one, it was his last year of hockey. At that point, they don't need two people to open the door. They can open the door themselves or they jump over the boards. So you really
Right.
need one coach. And his team had four coaches. I sent the convener a note and said, "You don't need me, you don't want me." He rejigged the
Yeah.
teams. There were two coaches. So I showed up for the first game to tell the other coach, "You don't need me. You don't want me. If you're on vacation, I'll fill in." He did me one better by not showing up at all. So I'm the head coach. I'm the head coach. So I took over I said, "I'll do the first game." And they didn't have practices at this point, so I don't have to worry about that. And I realized two things. One, they already knew how to play hockey. I didn't have to teach them. And two, they weren't going to listen to me anyway. So I'll coach. So anyway, I coached that year, and I'm not going to give away the end of the story, but it turned into a pretty surprising, exciting, wonderful year to cap my coaching career. But the point of all of it is, man, you do not have to be fully qualified to contribute. You do not have to know everything. There's a saying in business, building the plane while it's in the air. You can do that. You can't do that with a plane. Please don't do that with a plane. You can do that in life. You can jump in and learn and listen and pick things up and find the strengths that you have to add to situations. And I think that's the takeaway for everybody who reads this. You don't have to be an expert. You don't have to be the best, but you do have to show up, listen, learn, and apply your skills.
That's it. That's it. And it'd be useful, right? You're not there to create more
No, that's what one of
more
the
challenges.
coaches, one of the coaches said to me after I was after a game, and I would encourage the players coming off the ice. I'd really made a point of pointing out what they were doing right. You were great at this. Because once they hear that, they're going to want to do the thing they were great at again. And he came up to me afterwards and said, "You are really useful." I thought, man, that's the best thing I could hear as an unqualified hockey coach.
I love that. Yes. I just to put things into perspective to people who don't may not understand what the hockey culture is in Canada. But yeah, I think you said it best is you're at a hockey game, you have 20,000 fans. You know, anywhere else in the world, you have 20,000 fans. And if you mess up, it's okay. They're there to cheer you on. It's good. You got this. You'll pick it back up. In Canada, you have 20,000 critics that are just
Yeah, you
there
have
to.
20,000 coaches in the stand. I didn't make that up. I read that somewhere else,
Oh,
but
yeah.
that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
People in Canada know hockey, and
They'll point out everything. So to be able to pass, to get that out of your head and just say, okay, we're here for the kids. We're going to get this done. And yeah, point out the good stuff. Yeah, we make mistakes. The kids know they've made a mistake. So let's work around that. So I think that's great. And it's a great message all across. And this is what I like about your storytelling is it is power, it packs a punch. It's a funny story. There's some funny anecdotes, and I really recommend everybody to read those stories about, you know, a coach that doesn't play hockey who puts a pair of skates on. But no, it's great, and it's the same with parenting. Kids don't come with a manual. You don't know what you're doing as a first parent, you know, and then you think you figured it out. You have a second child, a child that's completely different, so you got to start all over again. And it's the same when you with your first job. So I think it's such a great message to pass around, and I really appreciate you sharing that with us because there's a lot there to take in.
yeah, my first thought when my first son was born is, man, I hope I don't screw him up. And then, the kids actually do come. Children in general come with a manual. There are a lot of books. But it's like having a manual for a computer, like any computer. They don't have the manual for your kid. And that's something you got to learn yourself. And, I tell my kids, the hardest job I have, the hardest part of my job actually is knowing when to say something and knowing when not to say something. And I'll sometimes before I say something, I'll let them know that, look, I don't know if what I'm telling you is right. I don't know if I should be telling you this, but I'm going to do it anyway, and here's why.
Yeah, and that's the why. It's not just, you want to say something, it's because it's going to be useful. And that's what's important about it.
Well, you hope it makes a difference. I asked my son once, look, I can do two things here. I can let you learn this lesson yourself, or I can give you the benefit of the mistakes I've made and other people like me have made, and know what my friends have said about the situation you're in now and what they wish they'd done at the time. Tell me what you want me to do. And then whatever they pick, that's it.
And then it's a choice for them to say. That's a powerful way to say it. I think it's great because then it's not just you giving them the morals. You know, it's not like you're not preaching. You're just telling them, this is it. I come with years of experience with this, and
Yeah, you can
so
tell them
you go.
stories, right? Stories are always very powerful, as you know. You're a really good storyteller. That carries through. And the morals, you can talk about morals. The morals they're going to learn are from what you do and the way you act and what you say. That's what they're going to learn.
No, I think that's great. I could talk to you so much longer about this, but let's talk about your book because this is really all it is. You have it all caps as your first book, but this one, The Unqualified Hockey Coach, do you have it with you? Can you show
I
us
do, I
for
do.
those
It's
who are?
right here. I'm gonna show you the first one too. In case
Yes,
people
so
like
terrible.
this one, they can buy this one. It's a little
This
bigger
one
and
as
bigger.
well. Yes,
It won four
beautiful.
literary awards. I'm pretty happy that somebody liked the book enough to do that. But The Unqualified Hockey Coach has seven short stories. And each of them are around the theme that you make a difference. There's a quote that I use in the beginning. See if I can even read it. It's act as if what you do makes a difference. It does. And it's by a philosopher named William James. And I had always hoped to make a difference. And sometimes I'd wonder if I had. When I read that quote, I realized that even trying to make a difference is making a difference. You know, being aware that you can. When you look at the way people have made differences in your life for good or bad, then you start to be aware of what you are capable of and what your actions, both good and bad, can do, and how you can address the mistakes you've made with people, the way you can talk to people about them, address mistakes you've made with them, try to overcome them. I believe that's very important. It shows your humanity, it shows your humility. I'm loath to use a word like humility from someone who's spent 35 years in television. It's not a humility business. You have to have an ego to be in here. But it shows you're willing to own your own mistakes. And even that's a big influence. So every one of these stories talks about those. There's a story about meeting Bruce Springsteen. I met Bruce Springsteen for 12 seconds. He's my favorite artist. I wondered why I was there. I have a relationship with his music, but not him. And these photo ops, it was with his book signing. 12 seconds feels like a false experience, but it wasn't. And there's a good reason why. That's in the story. The other one was running my first and only marathon. You know, I learned a lot about myself. And, you know, there's one person that showed up to help. And boy, did it make a difference. There's one about singing. Most people are terrified of singing in public. When I was in public school, our school was in a singing competition, citywide singing competition. At one point during rehearsals, teacher stopped everybody and asked them to sing individually. And then she asked a few of us just to move our lips. And I was one of those kids.
Oh,
That is still with me. But there's,
yeah.
you know, there's more to the story. There's a lot more to that story. And for anybody who's ever been afraid of singing or has ever endured the crucible of a child recital, I did a recital as an adult. So that, again, a lot of influence in that story. There's one about this is such a pretentious word. I hate using it, but it's accurate. Protege. I've got a protege. And she looks at me as a mentor. And that relationship, for a lot of reasons, is something that people can take things from. It's one of the most important relationships in my life. I talk to her as much as I talk to anybody. And she's looked out for me at least as much, if not more, than I've looked out for her. So there's a lot you can take away from that one. And then there's the story about my parents. And then there's the story about the utopian, which is the story that I end with. And it's about a relationship with an online friend. We all have online friends now, right? Like legitimate friendships we have with people we may never meet. And this relationship is one of the most inspiring things that's ever happened in my life. And I really want people to look at that story and realize what you can do with your pain in a very positive way.
Yeah, because that's the reality now in the world that we're in. I find when I pivoted in my career was I got the most support and mentorship and encouragement from people that I'd never met before, So those online relationships there, I mean, we hear the horror stories of other things, but there are some that are genuinely just positive and uplifting. So it's nice to have that in there as well, just to see how everything is evolving. I think it's great. Where can people get the book? Where can they find it? And
You can find it on Amazon. That's where people buy their books now.
yes.
Just look for The Unqualified Hockey Coach by Craig Kolbe on Amazon. You'll find that there. You know, feel free to follow me as an author on my author page. Also on Goodreads, you can follow me on Goodreads. You can find out more about my writing and my brother's writing at kolbevision.net/books.
Sounds good. I'm going to put that in the description so people can refer to it to find it. And I know writing a book keeps you busy for a while. So what's next? Do you have anything planned? Any new projects coming up?
Well, I've got to do the audio version of this book. That's
Yes.
next. And then I want to write the next book, which will be quite different, is one that I hope will lead to speaking engagements, something you and I both know a little bit about.
Yeah. Absolutely, that's fun. I love sharing that platform with you because it was a lot of fun to be on stage and seeing you in work. Because I've seen, we see you on TV. You have your own podcast as well, but to see you at, like in person on stage, the energy that comes out of it was great. So I appreciate you coming on today and sharing your story with us. That's wonderful.
Well, I love your presentation. I like everything you're doing, Danielle. You bring genuineness and positivity to the world, and we need a lot more Danielle Baker in the world. So thank you very much for
Thank you.
being my new friend and also for bringing me on your show and helping me get my message out as well. I really appreciate this and I appreciate you.
Thank you very much. And I'll make sure to put all the information for people to contact you. Is there where is the best way to follow you or to contact you if they want to learn more about the work that you're doing and they want to book you as
You
well?
can contact me through my website. You can also email me at craig@colbyvision.net.
Perfect. Excellent. Well, thank you so much. Any last words of wisdom before we go? You've shared a lot of golden nuggets there, but do you have last words or parting words for us?
I don't know if I have words of wisdom. I don't know if I had words of wisdom, but what I will say is please buy the book.
Yes.
What I always try to do is write about me, but make me think about you. My goal is always to change your life. And from the feedback I've heard from other people, they will stop after chapters for a day or two and think about it and think about their own lives. So please do that. And if you like it, tell your friends. If you don't, just tell me. And I really hope you'll pick up and enjoy the book and talk to me about it.
Yeah. And the reviews are so important as well, because then it helps put the book in front of the people that need to read it. And if you
Yep.
do need to put the book down for a second to digest it, then that's a good sign. It's a really good book. So thank you again for putting it out there, sharing those stories with us. And I can't wait to see how that evolves and how that develops. It's going to be wonderful.
Me
Thank you.
too. Thank you again.
Yeah, and for everybody watching, don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. Don't forget to follow Craig as well and get his book, because you're really going to get, no matter where you are in your life, you're going to get something out of it. And until next time, stay safe, stay awesome, and we'll talk soon.